Hi everybody, this is Ken Fallon. I'd like to apologize to start off with for the poor quality of audio on my side of this recording. There's a known bug with Fedora and Skype call recorder. There is no solution for it. It seems to happen, and because it's a closed source recording application, unfortunately there's nothing I can do. I didn't have time to come up with other solutions for recording, so it's only on my half of the recording and not on Fernando's half. So if you can grin and bear it for a while, I think the interview is well worth listening to. Thank you very much.
Everybody, my name is Ken Fallon, and today it's my great pleasure to be able to interview Fernando. And I'm not even going to attempt your second name, Fernando. Could you tell us your second name?
Botelho. Yes. Okay. Botelho.
And you're from the F123 Foundation, is that correct?
Well, it's not actually a foundation, but it's a project.
Yeah.
It's led by F123 Consulting, which is our company. And we do follow free and open source software principles. So we support a number of libraries and developments that we think are important in terms of accessibility. And the F123 itself is a distribution as well.
Okay, very good. And your website is f1, 2, 3.org.
Exactly. And we have versions in English, Spanish, Portuguese, and French. So it's f123.org/en for English, ES for Spanish, and FR for French, and just f123.org, the default is Portuguese.
Okay, can you tell us a bit about your background, how you ended up being involved with this company?
Well, I am blind, so I've always been interested in accessibility issues, but I worked in different areas. I worked for a small NGO in New York. I worked for a United Nations agency in Geneva, Switzerland. I've worked with a Swiss bank in philanthropy services in Zurich. And at some point in that career, I thought I wanted to do something of my own. And that's when we started F123. The idea behind F123 is that, as most of your listeners probably already know, assistive technology, you know, the screen readers, screen magnifiers, and all kinds of technologies that persons with disabilities need and use is incredibly expensive, at least the conventional solutions sold in wealthy economies is incredibly expensive. So we wanted to have something that was based on open source software and that was affordable. So we started F123. First, just me and my wife, kind of putting together a prototype at home on our free time. And this was back in 2007 and then 2008. And then finally, we got a prototype going and we found some funding and started our project in more of an official way in 2009. Launched the first version of F123 in Portuguese in 2010, in Spanish and English in 2011. And here we are, keeping it going.
So were you born blind or did you gradually?
No, I was born with a visual impairment, but I was not I was not blind and I was not legally blind either. I had just a difficulty with sports and other things, but I could read slowly and I could get around. And then I lost a lot of my vision when I was about 16, and then lost just about all my vision when I was about 19 or so, 19, 20 years old.
Okay. How did you get involved in software and open source?
Well, I've always been very interested in in software in general, just because I needed it really badly to be competitive at work, at school, and so forth. And then open source, it was kind of the obvious choice. I always thought technology could play a very constructive and positive role in society as a whole, not just getting things done, but also helping with decentralization of power and control and so forth. So I thought open source was a clear choice, not just for cost, but also in terms of having a solution that remains a solution, a viable solution over the long term. And the only way to do that is with decentralization of control and of development.
Okay. So you started this company. It's a for-profit company, I presume?
Yes, but that's a good question. It's technically a for-profit company, but what we are doing is what some people have been calling social entrepreneurship. So social entrepreneurs are people that are using strategies that are typically used in for-profit entities, and they are using it to try to solve social and environmental problems in large scale.
Yeah.
And some people do that with NGOs, other people do that with for-profits. And in our case, it's technically a for-profit because that makes it easier to get loans and look for investors and so forth. But we have a commitment of reinvesting any profits into further development of our work. And our mission is really increasing access to education and employment for the blind. And, there's always more that needs to be done in that realm. So yeah, we're not worried about having any real profits anytime soon.
Yeah, okay.
There's a long way to go.
So you put this together. You have a distribution. What's it based on?
It's based on Ubuntu, just because it made the most sense back when we started. Even today, it's a very interesting distro. Now, given that they have not been giving accessibility the same level of attention they used to recently, we have started reconsidering that choice, but we haven't had the time and resources to really move on to anything else so far. So the latest version being launched right now in Portuguese is based on 13.04 from Ubuntu.
Okay, I kind of have to ask this question. Jonathan Nadu has his own distribution. I know there's another blind distribution, and Jonathan would argue Sonar is an accessibility distribution. And now there's F123. Are we seeing here in the accessibility community, free and open source community, exactly a reflection of what's happening in the general open source community insofar as having a plethora, multiplication of distributions when people would think, hey, we should all get together and work together?
Yes. Yes, I think we are seeing the same kind of stuff that you see in the overall open source world. And the challenge is that everybody has slightly different ways of thinking about how to get things done and somewhat different ways of working. And sometimes you're able to work together, sometimes you're not. What I think differentiates F123 from some of the others, there's Vinux, there's Sonar, there's Linux Acessível in Brazil, there's all kinds of solutions out there. But F123, what we try to do is every time we have some funding that we can use in anything we want, we fund developments of upstream project. So we helped with WebKit, GTK improvements. We've helped with Compass Fusion, eZoom, the plugin improvements. So we invest in things that benefit everybody else as well, not just F123.
Okay, and that's actually more or less the same answer I get from Jonathan when we're talking about Sonar, that things get contributed upstream and everybody benefits. So.
Okay. Yeah, so I think what you have to do is anybody, you know, interested in looking at what we've done, it's easy to just go to the list, do a search for F123, and there will be a bunch of thank you emails and so forth regarding our contribution. So, you know, so that's... Yeah.
So what's your plans for F123 for the next year or so?
Well, what we want to do is focus on content for a little bit. Obviously, you never stop with the technical stuff, but we also think there's a great need for not so much documentation. There is quite a bit of documentation out there, but there is a need for training materials and in the language that people need them. So, you know, 80% of persons who are blind or visually impaired are in developing countries. And a very significant percentage of those do not speak English. And you have most of the training stuff out there is all in English. So we want to continue increasing the amount of material we provide to NGOs and instructors and just people at home studying on their own, learning on their own, that is in their own language. We'll have to focus on Portuguese and Spanish early on in the process, but we will continue looking for funding to do the French version of the stuff we have.
You're based in Brazil, is that correct?
Yes, we are based in Brazil, and we have people using F123 in over 20 countries now, and we have English, Spanish, and Portuguese versions of F123.
Okay. And there's plans for French versions? Or
yeah, that has been in our to-do list for a little while now.
Yeah.
But, you know, we are a little surprised because we thought it would be fairly easy to get funding from a foundation based in France to help us out with that, but it hasn't been that easy at all.
Ah, okay. You seem to be very connected with the, you know, around the world. I see Argentina, Brazil, China, Costa Rica, Ecuador, El Salvador, France, India, that you have interactions with government agencies and NGOs. Do you find, you know, where do you find that it's most beneficial to, you know, to get accessibility help? Where are you finding the helps coming from?
Well, I think that nobody that wants to have a meaningful impact in the disability world can do it without partnerships. You know, so we, from the start, we've had two major elements to our strategy, which is one, working with others, and two, having a multilingual solution. So, so that's why you know we have had partners that are NGOs. We've worked with foundations. We've worked with a couple of government agencies. And because of my experience in the past and our focus in developing countries, we've had a fairly good and wide-ranging network of contacts that we've been, you know, working with. And everybody needs a good solution. I mean, there's no lack of need. So it's just a matter of getting in touch with them and kind of getting things going, which is not easy, but it requires, there's a lot of communication that has to take place to get things going. You know, a lot of people don't understand that there are alternatives to Windows. A lot of people don't know where to begin, how to install. So all of that requires a lot of friendly, you know, accessible from a very pragmatic point of view, kind of documentation and help. So, and that's something we try to emphasize a lot in our work.
And do you find that being based as a business, that helps you with that? That you're at least seen as, oh, we have some financial reward in pushing this technology towards you, as opposed to if it costs nothing. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. No, we do have a version that is free, and then we have a version that we sell, which has a higher quality speech synthesizer. But this whole thing of being a company or being an NGO, I mean, in our case, I think it has helped more than hindered to be a company because we have been able to move fast And I think it has been a positive overall, but it also is an issue sometimes. Some foundations are not really used to supporting for-profit entities, and they are not even allowed in some places. So, you know, it's not all just good news. There are some challenges to doing this as well. Okay. And sometimes they are also not very used to the open source philosophy, you know, because it's the ultimate form of transparency, right? So when you do a conventional project, they have to verify everything you do by sending people to interview the people you have helped and so forth. When you do something in the technology realm that is open source, it's so much more transparent and so much more high impact. But a lot of these foundations, they don't understand that very well yet.
Do you have repos for your code, or how exactly do you approach the F123 distro?
We have, you know, when we funded Compass Fusion, the person Alejandro Leiva, he worked directly with people from that. I don't know if it's called library or that component. Mm-hmm. Now, when we worked with Web, when we funded WebGTK, WebKit GTK, that was done by a company called Igalia, which is really, really well connected and already working with all the upstream projects. So, yeah. You know, we don't even have a repo of our own. What we're going to have eventually is a repository, probably on GitHub, where we will bring together what we pull down from Ubuntu, and we mix together with our kind of help files and shortcut files and so forth, so that mixing is going to be available for others to contribute to and so forth. But that's not ready yet, unfortunately.
Okay. That's actually a request I have from the Sonar project is, you know, I have another machine. It's not running the same operating system, but I want to be able to manually add the enhancements, some of the enhancements at least, from that project onto my own desktop, regardless of distribution.
Uh-huh.
That's something that will be really useful.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think it's, in the abstract, it's all very good. In practice, it's a little more tricky. You know, some of the enhancements we have, for example, you know, when you turn on, you use the shortcut to open up gedit,
yep.
You know, text editor. Before it opens it up, it tells you, it gives you a kind of a help message. You know, using Control X, you can cut a piece of text after you've selected it using Shift and the arrow keys.
Yep.
And then it opens up gedit. And these kind of help messages gives it to you for like four or five different applications, which is really wonderful if you're a beginner and really annoying if you're not.
Yep, yep.
So there's another command to turn it off, of course, for more advanced users, and that's fine. But it's not, it's the kind of alteration to the distro that is may not be totally easily portable. I don't know enough about the code to tell you how portable that's going to be. But I'll talk to my developer. I think some of this stuff will be easily portable. Other things will be going to be a little more tricky to transport.
So how is your organization made up? Do you have full-time employees, or how does that work?
Well, yeah, most of the time we are three full-time employees.
Yep.
And we have other people that we work with on a part-time basis depending on funding. So depending on the project and the needs, we have other people coming in and out of the project. You know, in software, when you're doing a distro, you either have a 50 or 100 person team, or you have three plus, you know, a bunch
helpers,
of consultants, because they're very, very specific needs. So if we need something for LibreOffice, we're probably going to go to Lanido. If we need something with GNOME, we're probably going to go to Igalia. You know, so we have all the people that we want and like to work with, but we can't afford to have them on a full-time basis, at least not yet.
Unfortunately not.
Yeah.
I got your name directly from the Orca project. Can you tell us what your interaction? The Orca seems to be a central role in a central component, obviously, in all these, all the distros, regardless, yours included. Could you tell the listeners what the Orca project is? They're probably sick of hearing it by now. But
no, it's fine. Orca is the screen reader that is used by the GNOME graphical user interface. And because it uses some libraries that are widely used, and the Orca also works in other distros or interfaces that we are interested in, like LXDE. And so Orca for us is absolutely crucial and very strategic in its importance, and we work with them all the time. Now, what we have observed is that although Orca is moving really fast in its development, there's a bunch of bugs or dependencies, or, you know, I don't know how, what would be the best name for it, a number of issues that require modifications in the applications themselves. So LibreOffice has a few bugs, or quite a few bugs in accessibility that have been there for a while now, and they need to be addressed so that Orca and any other solution can work with it well or better. Firefox in Gecko, you know, the library Gecko, needs fixing in a number of areas so that it helps us deal with not just Orca, but any other screen reader to interact better with Firefox and Thunderbird. So what we are realizing now is that more than ever, we need kind of a joint effort between these upstream projects that are so important for the day-to-day user and Orca itself. So Orca can do its part, but it doesn't get the job done if the other applications are not doing their part.
But from what I hear, there's a very low priority on accessibility in those projects, that they have a limited amount of resources as well. So what's the solution?
Yeah. Well, the solution is making more noise, right?
Yes, exactly.
I think, you know, what you are doing is very valuable, and what everybody else working with media and newsletters and podcasts, all of that is very valuable. What they are going to realize is that a lot of governments have criteria in their procurement, in their processes that require them to purchase and contract for technologies that are accessible. So when they realize that, hey, we're going to lose a lot of procurement opportunities, a lot of work and funding, if our stuff is not accessible, then they're going to give it a greater priority. I mean, it's what happened to Microsoft. They never cared about accessibility. They only started caring about it in the 1990s when Massachusetts told them they were not going to buy licenses because Microsoft Office and Windows had huge accessibility problems. So it's, I mean, there is an ethical argument to be made. There's a social argument to be made. There's all kinds of even practical arguments to be made. I mean, everybody's aging, and a lot of the people at a later stage in life have visual impairments. So you can have all these arguments, but people still put it at the bottom of their priority list. Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about contracts, we all live off of contracts for technical support, contracts for software development, contracts for licenses in some cases. And in all those situations, if the customer requires it, then, you know, people listen.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I've also been thinking, you know, you got this graphical desktop, which from the point of view of automation, or, you know, doing anything interesting automation-wise, is very difficult. And at Ogcamp, in this presentation a few years ago, I was at an accessibility demonstration, and I realized that these applications, when done right, present a lot of hooks where Orca plug into, but that could equally be my bash script that does something when, you know, some API
exactly
works, or that a Twitter feed comes in. I know there are other ways to get at Twitter feeds, but you know that some proprietary hook appears in the web page. You know, so there are definitely technical reasons for people without vision problems getting involved in.
Yes, and then you have the situation where you have people working on libraries that they want these libraries to be as portable as possible. They want this same kind of code base to be used in cell phones and be used in computers and be used in everywhere else.
Yeah.
And the only way to make this really interesting and relevant is to, you know, remind people, look, if you're working on a cell phone, if your software is going to be running on a cell phone, I may want to use it hands-free or eyes-free. Right, I may be in a car, and I may want to listen to certain things rather than interact with it visually. So, you know, then people start to understand, but it's a long term, it's a long process.
Yeah, exactly.
This is something interesting that I mentioned earlier, the whole challenge of the speech synthesis. One of the challenges we face in the free and open source software world is that we don't have a very high quality speech synthesizer. We have a wonderful project, which is eSpeak, which is excellent. It's really fast. It's incredibly portable, and it's very light, so it can be used in all kinds of situations, embedded systems, all kinds of places. But it's a little mechanical sounding, and in some languages it's challenging for people to use it. So we need something that maybe it's not going to be quite as fast in terms of its reaction time, and maybe it's not going to be quite as light in terms of its footprint, but it's higher quality, more human sounding. And one of the things that I've been trying to propose to people is this. I've been contacted by an international organization, which in turn has been contacted by a number of governments. There's quite a few governments that do not have access to a speech synthesizer. In some cases, not even one that is proprietary. In other cases, neither proprietary nor free, and they need something in their own language. So what I'm thinking is we should get a group together and develop in parallel. Once we have some funding, we can get some experts and develop in parallel a bunch of languages at the same time, right? Because the process is basically the same. You identify the phonemes of the language and how that's going to be pronounced and dealt with and so forth. And I think there are two ways to go about it. I mean, to do it traditionally and concentrate the development in universities in each country, doing it with a central university in the US or Europe, coordinating the effort and kind of leading all the teams. And we can also combine that with kind of a crowdsourcing approach, where we have a website where people interested in different languages can go in and make changes to the way things are pronounced, different words are pronounced, without really knowing the technology behind it, changing the phonetics of certain words, and with HTML5 or JavaScript, however you might want to describe it, you can press submit and hear the changes, the pronunciation of the change you just made, and kind of vote on it, right? You could kind of crowdsource the development of better pronouncing speech synthesizers. There is definitely interest from governments. There is interest from technical guys all over the place, and definitely from the blind. What we need is leadership from a funding entity, somebody who can fund that central, that core team in Europe or in the US, that will then kind of lay this out. And in about 1 to 2 years, we could have like 10, 20, 30 different new languages available in open source speech synthesizers.
What in doing some research for this myself, well, in talking with Jonathan, my daughter has is dyslexic, and one of the things that we do to help her out is we got her a Chromebook, and we use eSpeak to talk back to her.
Yes.
And people listening to this will be familiar with the eSpeak text-to-speech in English, which is bad, but the text-to-speech in Dutch is just downright scary. she ran out of her room crying. And as part of that, I did some investigation into the human voices, and I came across the Miri text-to-speech service.
Yes, Java-based.
Yeah. As part of that, I know that Jonathan Nadu has developed instead of Speech Hub, he's got a Speech Dispatcher, which uses Miri text-to-speech. As part of that project, there is the ability to go in and read texts and create a database so that you can create your own synthesized voices. Is that something like what you're thinking about, or am I way off the mark here?
No. That's one of the possibilities. I mean, I would prefer that it would not have a Java dependency, right? I think it would make more sense if it was developed with a language that is truly open source, free and open source. And then I think, more leadership need, somebody spreading the word out, bringing people together, explaining the steps to do all these things. I mean, what sometimes it's overlooked by a lot of distros that, want to have a social impact, but don't, is that people need a lot of hand-holding. It's just a reality. I mean, there's a group of very sophisticated users, and I am assuming you're one of those, and Jonathan is another, and the Vinux guys are others. And they play a very important role in the ecosystem. But then there is a need for others to just help people get things going. And when they want a solution for a child or for a parent, they don't want to be installing stuff. They want something that is plug and play, right? And this is something that is sometimes understood in the abstract realm and other times not understood at all, but never really understood in practice, right? So when we do F123, we do everything we can to make it completely as automatic as possible and as easy to understand and use as possible. And this is something that requires time and effort, and it's not easy, and it's what's overlooked a lot of times. So yeah, Miri TTS is an interesting option, but there's nobody out there spreading the word about its existence. It's just techies that know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no infrastructure to do the changing that the improvements that you're talking about ready to go, and nobody's marketing its existence. Nobody's paying the bill to have a server providing this to everybody else and then pressing a button and have it work in your computer rather than in some server somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I get enthusiastic.
No, it does. There's one thing that I'd just like to mention, that Java is released under GPL v3, so it's as free anything else. There's also I'm reluctant to open it up now because of the bandwidth connections. There are online places where you can, websites where you can record in voices for Miri TTS. And from what I understood about it was the libraries for the voices were more of a problem than the speech synthesizer. So theoretically, if you were able to get the database for the language and the audio and the sounds, that could actually be taken and put into eSpeak as well. So all the projects can benefit once. But I think the issue that a lot of the text-to-speech engines are having is that while some parts of it is open, other parts, the databases or the original source material is closed, and therefore they can't go back in and make modifications for that.
I understand. Yeah, that's probably the case with Pico or whatever the Google Voice is called. Mm-hmm. And So yeah, no, I agree, and I have to say I'm not an expert in speech synthesis. Well, what I'm an expert in is the non-technical user, and the non-technical user has no idea of any of the complexities we are talking about. He or she only knows that he can either not have access to anything or have access to eSpeak or have a pirated copy of JAWS. And none of those are really ideal solutions for the non-technical user. And, you know, when we are trying, you know, whether we put an international project together to collect recordings of people's voices, or we are doing some more technical stuff with eSpeak, or, you know, what was the name of festival, and things like that, it doesn't really matter. What I'm saying is that we are missing a decent solution that is free, that is in multiple languages, especially languages that are not financially interesting for proprietary software makers. And there's nobody doing that. And I think there is a potential to do it with crowdsourcing in terms of the development itself and the quality control kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. And as well as, you know, do this in parallel over, you know, maybe 2 years, and we could get some, you know, spread the know-how about how to make TTS in a number of developing countries and, you know, improve the situation.
Yeah, because right now there's the HMM voice creation, which is a program that you can download, and it'll present a GUI to you. And you basically follow a text. You read the text like I don't know if you're familiar with the karaoke concept where a bar follows the text.
Exactly.
And the beauty of things like that is that, on one hand, if you're reading a public domain work, the recording that you have, the regular Geoblog MP3 WAV file, can be uploaded to the LibriVox project as well, too. So you get a free book, as well as that gives the database the language processing engine
the raw material.
The raw material. I know they're talking about this book, and this is what it sounds like, and then I can go off and churn off my databases, and all those databases are available to people. Because
fantastic.
I remember reading about it, and it seemed to me that they were in the how-to on this page, GitHub Miri TTS. If you go in there, voice import tutorial, they go into a lot of detail about they have the technology, but the problem is they don't have the volume of raw data, people sitting down recording the voices that they need to get the speech synthesizer.
Well, yeah, that should be something easily crowdsourced, you know. I mean, there's a huge amount of people that are retired, or even people that are not retired but are interested in doing something positive for society. We have all the time, we receive emails all the time about, you know, we want to help, how can I help? And a lot of these people are not technical, but they could definitely read stuff. We just need, you know, somebody to fund kind of the back office to coordinate this, you know, maybe do a little contest, or, you know, send diplomas to people, awards or whatever, to the most hours, the guy that produced the most hours of material. I mean, there's a million things that can be done. And there's just so difficult to find a foundation or a government that is smart enough to think about these processes strategically, right?
Yeah,
it's a short-term investment with a huge, absolutely huge long-term impact, a social impact, which is what F123 is interested in.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yes. So, is there anything else that we should talk about before I let you go?
Well, I think that's really, you know, I think this represents well what we are trying to do, you know, our technical work, but not just our focus on technology. We are always focused on the end result. So if by, you know, to get people employed and educated, we need better training materials, that's what we do. To get people freed from proprietary solutions, if we need a better speech synthesizer, that's what we want to focus on. I mean, that's it's the end result that F123 is interested in, and we are always looking for partners, volunteers, anybody interested in South America and Africa in general, and persons with disabilities. That would be great, although we don't limit ourselves to that. Those are regions where we have a very important impact. So, you know, anybody interested, he or she is most welcome to contact us. I can be reached at fernando@f123.org.
Yeah, and the link to that will be in the show notes. Just before you go, could you tell us about the Educano Livre project?
Educação Livre is like free education, free as in freedom.
Yeah.
This is a project we've done to bring access to F123, to open source solutions to kids with disabilities in Brazil. So we've had a bunch of people in Curitiba, Brazil, and in a couple of other places being trained in the use of F123, and with that, improving their access to education and employment. We've had that for about 3 years now, and you're going to start new classes now in February in a bunch of NGOs around Brazil.
Yeah.
And that's the name of this initiative, because no foundation usually will fund software development, but they will fund software development if together with that you're providing training and you're providing, you know, software to the kids and so forth. So they are interested in something with very practical impact in the lives of people.
And from what I'm reading here at the end of the... you're sampling some graduates that 55% were employed, 6% were on practical training that led to VOLTA, that's expected to lead. 12% had retired or had left Brazil, leaving 27% unemployed, which seems quite high, you know, but I think if you take it into the context of blind people, it would be quite low, really.
Yes, exactly. I mean, in wealthy economies, you usually have, like in the U.S., the estimate people always throw around is 70% unemployment among the blind. In Switzerland, it's 69% among persons with disabilities in general. And in Brazil, the normal unemployment is probably around 95% or more. So, you know, when you talk about graduates of any training that have only about 20-something percent unemployment, that's absolutely incredible. So that's the kind of impact we want to have, when we want to continue having. The only difference is that we want to increase the scale.
Yes.
So we are always looking for partnerships or clients that are governments or foundations that want to do large-scale projects, because that is the true potential of open source. That is something where proprietary solutions cannot even get close to us in terms of the price performance ratio.
Yeah, I think this is, everybody listening to this, there's definitely something that they can do to help the situation. Well, if you're, no matter how much of a hacker you are or what end of this, where you fall in, there's something that you can do to help this situation here, whether it's bugging LibreOffice or Gecko or Qt at conferences, asking them why they have so many open bugs in Orca, whether it's sitting down with a good book and just reading it along with the screen so that you can upload that to LibreVox while at the same time producing forever and a day, perhaps, a good sounding voice, synthesized speech voice that can be used by the visually impaired community. Or it's helping out with the Miri TTS project so that, as you say, building a website that's HTML5 compliant, that somebody can go in on their afternoon break and can read, a paragraph in Spanish, and then the following day read another paragraph, and the following day read another paragraph, just so that it is completely transparent and easy to do, and that it goes out on Twitter, hey, I've just read 15 minutes of Gone with the Wind, or, I don't know, Tale of Two Cities, to support the LibriVox Miri TTS project. So there is definitely something you can do. And other than that, you can get in touch with your political correspondents, your political party, your local town hall, your local library, and ask them what they're doing and spreading the word that this type of software is out there. Because at the end of the day, whether you're a supporter of the ACF or F123 or any of the other good projects, all this stuff is fed upstream and everybody wins in the end.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better.
I've been saying it for a while. People are probably sick of hearing me saying it. Well, Fernando, thank you very, very, very much for taking the time out of your day. Is there anything else that I didn't cover that you... don't be a stranger. You can always come back and give us updates. This is not a problem.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll keep in touch. I'll let you know how things are going, and I think it's a joint effort. I look forward to hearing from you, and thanks to all your listeners for any support that they can give accessibility.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And folks, remember, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Share Alike, 3.0 license.